Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. 2 hours today. 2 hours of about the most fun that can happen on radio. 2 hours of flannel panel today. Our flannel panel guests are here and ready to go. And if you haven't heard of the flannel panel before, well, we put on flannel shirts and then we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And we've all got our flannel shirts on. I'm very impressed with us this time because there's usually somebody who forgot that they're supposed to wear a flannel shirt to the flannel panel. Our guests, as always, first of all, Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. Hello, Chris Check.
I have a new flannel shirt. Jacqueline got this for me for my birthday in January.
Did she really? For the flannel panel?
She did. And it's from a really expensive catalog that I can't afford. But
irony of getting a flannel from like an upscale catalog is such a betrayal of what flannels are all about. It's upscale,
but actually it was on clearance.
Oh,
we only have to forego one monthly mortgage payment.
Our other guest, Joe Heschmeyer.
Hi, Joe Heschmeyer. Misremembering, or does your wife also hate flannels? Did she buy you a shirt that she dislikes in service of the show?
Okay, so no, actually, it's a little more nuanced than that. She hated all the flannel shirts that I ordered.
I see.
In preparation or whatever, or to be a member.
Oh, so that is a nice shirt.
Well,
she
look,
got
it's
you.
Got like the. It's
oh
got like the
goodness.
NC.
That's like a tailored shirt. Look at that.
What do you call this? The two layers?
I didn't know they made flannel in Paris.
This is
that looks like Paris flannel shirt.
Yeah, chic.
I think we pronounce that Paris.
Flannel.
yeah.
Joe Heschmeyer is a podcaster. You should check out his podcast. It's called Shameless Popery, and you can find it at shamelessjoe.com, shamelessjoe.com.
I listened to your podcast, Joe. It's good.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no.
You know, people listening might be saying, well, of course he listens. No, he does not normally listen to podcasts. So this is a real compliment.
He does listen to podcasts, but it'll be about weird things like water rights in Los Angeles or something like that. It'll be stuff that you're like, and he'll say, it's the most fascinating thing.
Okay, but so just a second.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. And
I didn't mean to offend you. I apologize.
No, it's for sure.
About your dumb podcasts.
And
I didn't.
I love it. I recommend that that podcast. But nonetheless, here.
Yeah.
We are here, actually more than 8 hours a day. And if you think about the time that I work on Catholic Answers things when I'm not in the building, just ask Jacqueline, it's quite a bit of time. So full disclosure.
Oh, yeah.
If I am going to listen to a podcast,
right.
It might not be about apologetics or theology.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
Now, there is one that I do like that has a Catholic flavor to it.
And it is?
It's on Jimmy's network, and it's called American Catholic History.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it's Noel Easter Crow and Tom Crow. They're married. Now, they do this. All right. So I'm just going to say it. They do this husband-wife thing.
Don't use the word corny. That will hurt their feelings. Were you going to say corny?
What do you want to call
it's,
it?
All right, corny.
It's like, I know they're trying to be like the husband-wife thing.
I know. It's very sweet.
But it is an excellent podcast. And I'll tell you, their knowledge of the Catholic Church's relationship with America, the uneasy relationship going back to before the founding,
yeah,
is excellent. And they keep it, and it's a recurring theme in the podcast. And I salute them for introducing listeners to men and women and events in the history of the United States relevant to our Catholic faith that most of us do not know about.
I applaud
and
them.
And so if
too.
They
You're
want
right.
to do the husband-wife bit as part of it, fine. I give them a pass.
All right, schnookums.
Yeah, no, it's like that, right? It's a little schnookums.
I know. There's so many things that we could talk about. So, because we do the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. If there's something that one of these two gentlemen says that you don't like or something that I say that you do like, you can call in and we'll try to get you on the air. 888-318-7884.
But we never really do take callers.
We have taken calls. We have taken calls.
This time it's going to be different.
Yeah. No, we have taken callers on the flannel battle before. I don't recall ever taking callers and not regretting it.
Okay.
But we have taken callers.
Be the first.
All right. I'm going to give you some choices to start with. You want to talk about the pandemic anniversary? You want to talk about the anniversary of Pope Francis' pontificate? You want to talk about an actor from The Office? Or do you want to talk about, let's see, what else we got?
Yeah, let's go with
banks
the
collapsing.
The actor from The Office.
For $500, Alex.
Out of all that, you chose the actor from The Office?
Actors from The Office.
Yeah. Because I have something to say about this.
All right. So Rainn Wilson, an actor from The Office who plays Dwight.
Dwight Schrute.
One of the greatest characters ever on a television sitcom.
Yes, because every office has one.
Has a Dwight Schrute. Yeah. Oh.
Don't ask which one.
Yo, you know I'm asking. I got to know who's the Dwight Schrute of Catholic. Oh, wait. If I don't know, does that mean it's me?
I tried to spare you. I tried to warn you not to ask.
Oh, no. Never mind. We don't want to ask that. All right. So he played Dwight Schrute, and he is of the Baha'i faith. You familiar with the Baha'i?
Isn't that one of those, like, everything?
Yes, it's a faith that's sort of...
Syncretist.
Joe did the world religions course in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics.
I did. I actually have a section on Baha'i, and that's pretty fair.
But Baha'i,
to kind of get all the different world religions together in the 19th century, and you know what happened? Just made one more.
Yeah.
Like non-denominationalism, but for world religions.
Well, I have
to say, are they the ones who print those bumper stickers?
Oh, I don't know. With the different religious symbols. Yeah. I just want to say, never had a bad experience with a Baha'i person. They just always seem like, I like the Baha'i. And Rainn Wilson has confirmed me in that there's something about the Baha'i faith that seems to draw nice people, because he's watching this TV show, right? And I think the TV show is called The Last of Us. Is that right, Edgar? The Last of Us?
Yeah, it's the zombie
show. It's the zombie show.
Because two episodes were set in Kansas City.
Was it one of those things where they used Vancouver to shoot Kansas, to make Kansas City, or was it actually
It was. So part of it was shot in Kansas City. They did they backed up traffic for a while to get some actual footage, and then they kind of splice it in there. So you can kind of look and recognize, like, I know where that building is, but the geography was actually wrong. So that ended up being a little more frustrating than edifying.
Yeah.
It's like
they shoot TV shows in my town. California, everything is set in your town.
Yeah.
But like in Kansas City, it's just like, oh, wow, like a commercial set here. We get super excited.
Yeah, remember the TV show Veronica Mars? They used to shoot that.
In Oceanside.
And then...
There was another one with the...
The one with the guys... They're bad guys. They're criminals.
There's the matriarch.
Animal Kingdom.
She's the matriarch.
Animal Kingdom.
What's her name?
Ellen Barkin. Yeah, Ellen Barkin. Animal Kingdom. Yeah, they used to shoot that in
Oceanside. Yeah.
But Rainn Wilson, actor from The Office, a Baha'i, a practicing member of the Baha'i faith, and he's watching this show, and it's called The Last of Us, which is a zombie show, and a Christian pastor is presented on the show. Now, I just want to ask you, and I would like to ask my audience, when you're watching a television program and an explicitly Christian character comes on, do you immediately go, who's this guy gonna murder?
Right.
You know, like, who's he got tied up in the basement? Because that's what Christians are, is weird and creepy on TV. No one is explicitly Christian, and then they just turn out to be nice and normal.
Yeah, or what extortion scheme is he involved in?
Right,
or,
Christianity is a pathology.
The architect of. Right.
So that it turns out that the pastor on this show, I believe eats people, and does some other horrible things. So I've never seen the show, but Rainn Wilson, he tweeted and made some comments about, why is this that Christians are so mocked and always put in these weird, creepy positions in Hollywood? And I thought, I like the Baha'i people even more now.
It's because his point is both kind of just a point of injustice, but also an artistic point. That he said, well, I'm going to quote him here. He said, I do think there's an anti-Christian bias in Hollywood. As soon as the David character in The Last of Us started reading from the Bible, I knew that he was going to be a horrific villain.
Yeah.
Could there be a Bible-loving reading preacher on a show who is actually loving and kind? And, the first time that happened, I bet that was amazing as a plot twist, and it was shocking, and it was transgressive.
Right.
But now it is so utterly predictable.
Right.
That when somebody is, like, really in-your-face Christian, they're just going to be awful, either very obviously from the first time you see them, just like the awful foil the hero has to like overcome.
Right.
Or they come off as like nice and too good to be true. And sure enough, they're going to be the horrible villain.
Right.
And both of those are such obvious two-dimensional plot moves at this point that it's just not good writing. I mean, apart from the injustice.
So which bothers you more, the bigotry or the laziness, Joe?
I've got no problem with stories in which Catholics or Catholic priests or clerics or non-Catholic preachers, whatever, are villains. That's fine. Those people exist. There are villains in their ranks, and it's totally fine. This is no one is making the 1940s, you got to always put the priest in a good light kind of argument. But when the priest is always in a bad light, or when the preacher is always in a bad light.
Right. It's just that, lazy.
It is. It's lazy, it's sloppy, and it's totally unbalanced. If there was some of both, it would be better.
I know the first time this was done, Joe.
When was it?
It was Robert Mitchum. Right?
Oh,
Night of the Hunter. Is that Night of the Hunter?
It's a great, terrifying movie.
On the knuckles, love, hate.
Yeah. He's got love and hate on his knuckles.
Yeah. He's a preacher, right? He's a bad preacher.
Yeah, I believe so.
Well, Elmer Gantry, he's kind of a
dope.
Is he a dope?
Simple.
Or is
simple.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is that the one that that Andy Griffith played? I can't remember where it was a preacher in a movie in the 1950s who I guess got obsessed with his power and went bad. But now I can't remember. I thought it might have been Elmer Gantry, but now I can't remember. But today, we're 70 years into television, and I never am happy to see a Christian character show up. Never. Am I happy that there's a Christian in a TV show.
Except it is notable from time to time when the opposite is true, and this actually just calls attention to the bias. But there's a program right now that's in the fourth or fifth season that I've seen a couple of episodes of, and I think it's called Manifest. Is that the one with the airplane that disappears and then comes back or something?
Yeah.
But
Edgar says yes.
Yeah,
Edgar watches all the
Manifest?
Shows.
I thought that was Lost. No, it's not Lost.
It's just Lost made by different people.
And the principal characters are obviously Christians.
Uh-huh.
And they are good people.
Aww.
And in fact, they quote scripture regularly. They regularly quote Romans.
Yeah.
God works it all to the goods, all to the good.
Oh.
That scripture passage is quoted almost in every episode.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, so it is.
I'm glad to hear that, Chris.
I'm a little embarrassed. I've seen this show as many times as I've had because as TV, it's not very good.
Well, here's another thing about TV. All the TV that's sold as really good TV is not worth watching. You're just going to, it's horrible. The stuff that, this is a great show. And it's just horrible stuff. But the mediocre TV is like the stuff that's kind of, I don't know, I prefer the lowbrow stuff.
I think it's a very popular show. It is lowbrow.
Yeah, but I think lowbrow in television is because it's all lowbrow and some of it has the pretense of not being lowbrow. And then you're just so tired, especially when they do lesson of the week television. When it's like, here's the lesson I was supposed to learn.
Right.
How about one week we learn the lesson that Hollywood doesn't like Christians? That would be a great lesson of the week TV show. So thanks to Dwight Schrute, Rainn Wilson for standing up for us.
Can I say something
for noticing what everybody notices and somehow you're not supposed to say it? Hollywood mocks Christians constantly.
This is something else that's striking that struck me about this, and I think about it every time something like this comes up. I'm amazed that people in Hollywood watch TV and watch movies.
Why are you amazed?
I just think that if I were involved in that work all day long, I would just
you'd be like turning on Catholic
Answers. Listen to a lot of Catholic podcasts.
No, exactly. I'd go read a book somewhere. I'd go work in my car. It's just funny to me that they watch other TV programs.
I had a similar thought actually. I was sort of a weird thing to imagine a TV star
watching other
down,
people's TVs,
watching other people on TV.
Yeah.
I imagine it wouldn't be as much fun. Like, I imagine you'd have such a critical eye of like,
I know
that
how
was shot
that.
Really badly,
yeah, exactly.
Or, you know.
Right.
That's
how
the apologists are with one another. They're like, there's Joe with his thing again. And then, here comes Tim Staples with his thing. All right, we'll take a break. I'm glad we started out with something positive, Rainn Wilson.
Come back, it's going to get worse.
Yeah, but now we'll get into the really nasty news. More news of the world from a Catholic perspective on the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
Hang on, Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment. Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN Global Catholic Network is the largest religious media network in the world. 11 global TV channels, English and Spanish radio networks with over 500 AM and FM radio affiliates, one of the largest Catholic websites in the world, dozens of podcasts every week, social media, electronic and print news services, and EWTN publishing. EWTN is the global Catholic network. For more about EWTN, visit EWTN.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's the Flannel Panel. Joe Heschmeyer, apologist and podcaster of Shameless Popery fame, and Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers here. We're all wearing flannel shirts and talking about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. Just so you know, about 15 minutes, huge Flannel Panel announcement. Huge Flannel Panel announcement.
It's going to be huge.
It is. It's going to be huge. And I thought
I just realized what it probably is. I wonder what this announcement is.
Yeah. Is it that your wife is having a baby, Joe?
What? Your wife is having a baby? You're having a third child, Joe? Did we just announce?
We are. Chris announced it on the air a while ago.
Wait, Joe, this is my understanding of what happened. You had not told Anna's family or maybe your family, but
correct.
Chris announced it on the air. Is that what happened?
The order went... Anna told one of her sisters, I told my parents, I told Chris told America, and then we told our family.
That is awesome. So glad I wasn't on that day, because I also, you told Chris, the same time you told Chris, you told me for a reason.
Yeah.
And then when we make our announcement, we'll tell you why Joe told us before he told a lot of other people. But I would have done the exact same thing Chris did. I would have done it even more elaborately. I'd have been like, Joe, I'm so happy for you. Child number three.
I think Joe was at pains to tell us that this was sotto voce for a time. And
I did nothing.
I just ignored that.
Right.
But not out of malice, just my usual inattention.
Yeah. Well,
One more
you want to talk about when there's a baby coming into the world, you got to admit, Joe,
especially
you want to talk
nowadays,
about that.
It's really big news.
Yeah. Like Donna, the director of marketing.
Grandma Donna.
She became a grandma the other day. Yep. We're the same age, me and her. I'm so jealous of her that she has a grandbaby.
She and I.
Yeah, what did I say? Her and me?
Me and her.
Did I say me and her, really?
You did. English major.
Sometimes I'm talking to the common man there, Chris. Okay, sorry.
Can we say one more thing about TV?
Go ahead.
I was thinking about this, and actually it's an observation that you made some time ago, Si, when we were talking about the trajectory of American television and Christianity. And one of the things that you observed is as television, the situation comedy especially, becomes a form, what the people in Hollywood do is not anti-Christian. Rather, it just ignores Christianity altogether.
On purpose, yes.
So all of the early sitcoms, I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke Show, they all seem like nice sort of wholesome American families.
Right.
But no mention at all of the practice of religion.
No, they created a world free of religion.
Utterly free of religion.
And presented it as the real world.
And I remember being struck one time, I remember this very, very clearly, watching the Brady Bunch, which was an unusual program.
And this was last year. You binged the Brady Bunch, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my unusual program, Mine, Yours, Ours, which is a difficult family form to make work, by the way. But I guess, I don't know, what am I, 8 or 9 years old? And it's the episode where Carol loses her voice to laryngitis, and everyone is concerned because she's supposed to sing in church at Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And her voice comes back and she sings at church. I'm sorry to give it away.
Ah, darn it. Well, she had that certain Wessonality.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
But I remember thinking, oh, so the Brady Bunch are Christians. They're just sort of, they're some kind
of... But this is the first we've heard of it.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
But isn't it funny that even as a child, you noticed...
It was striking.
...that there's religion on TV. That's not the way we do this. We're not. There's not supposed to be religion on TV.
Yeah, so for the longest time, the situation comedy all through the 50s, even Westerns or whatever. Yeah. Now, Westerns, maybe you'll see a little bit of, they might be reading the Bible in the evening.
Right, or there's a preacher, and it's not a weirdo preacher. You know, there's a town preacher.
Something like that with Gunsmoke. Smoke or one of those, but most of the situation comedies, just a world completely without religion.
Yeah,
and now it's of course taking the next step.
Yeah, a world against religion.
Yeah,
we started talking about this
even as it lives with all of the things that religion gave it.
Right, like there's nothing bad in I Love Lucy.
Right,
except the weird thing where they sleep in two different beds.
Yeah, that
but
is
that's
weird.
That's bad. They shouldn't have done that. No. But there's nothing bad in I Love Lucy. but it does present a bad image of the world in that. It presents the world as if everything can go on just fine as it is without religion. And right. That's not true. You cannot make it. And you can't have a 1950s America without God. And if you try, you get 1970s America.
Right.
Joe, we were talking about the world's greatest actor, Rainn Wilson, who's now my favorite person and actor in the world.
Yes.
But you wanted to follow up with some.
Well, I was just going to say, because the theme was... the kind of poor treatment of Christians in the media. And again, as I said before, I don't mind presenting bad Christians, but when you can't present good Christians who are like fully fleshed out characters,
yeah,
that's a failure in good writing. Yeah. I mean, it just is.
You know how much Christians would love it if you would just put a Christian on who struggles with their faith, who struggles with sin, but doesn't do so in a weird, creepy way. Just struggles, is having a hard time. That's fine. You don't have to make Christians saints. But make them people, not caricatures.
I think I would be content at this point if they would just, to Joe's point about writing, if they would just get the facts right. And please, my friends, just call Catholic Answers. We will.
We'll consult.
If you're listening in Hollywood, I'll do this for you for free. But don't get something wrong about what a sanctuary looks like or how the mass, whether it be the old rite.
I'd be happy if priests wouldn't. Do that.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yes, that would be. Amen. But the church does in fact teach certain things and has reasons for why she. And if you want to characterize the Catholics as the bad guys, very well. But just call us and we'll tell you whether you are actually saying something or staging something that is in fact Catholic.
Yeah,
because that really drives me up the wall.
Yeah, it's weird that
I can think of two really glaring examples of this: one Catholic, one Protestant. I'm not endorsing either of these movies. It's been a long time since I've seen either of them, and I'm sure they're worse than I remember. But Boondock Saints, which is set in Boston, obviously includes like a Catholic church. The Catholic church wouldn't actually let them shoot in there because the movie was too offensive. And so I think they shot in a Presbyterian church. But I remember watching it, and at the Our Father, the priest leaves it by himself while the congregation is silent.
Perfect example.
That's the kind of stuff they always do. And like you in a Catholic church, a Hollywood Catholic church, all kinds of weird stuff happens that doesn't happen in an actual Catholic church.
Even in a heterodox one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's like no one's ever had this experience of an English language Our Father only said by the priest while the congregation remains totally silent.
Yeah.
The other one is more defendable, but at the beginning of Children of the Corn, there's
your movie list is horrific.
And I was embarrassed admitting some of the stuff I watched.
Boondock Saints and Children of the Corn. How many people were killed in those two movies?
I don't know. I mean, Children of the Corn, not that many. But Children of the Corn, opening shot is an Iowa Baptist church, and the pastor comes out wearing like a full Roman collar. And I know that you'll find some like progressive Baptists that try to do like a little more liturgical stuff. I am skeptical that you will find one adjacent to a cornfield in Iowa, a Baptist church anywhere.
Yeah, right, yeah. Exactly.
That you'll find vestments on a Protestant pastor. I mean, it's particularly a Baptist one. I mean, it was just like immediately 2 seconds in, you're kind of like, this is going to be a bad film.
Yeah. Well, again, thanks to Rainn Wilson for the comment, but let's move on to some other news.
We can't stretch the Rainn Wilson thing out for another hour and a half. Are you sure?
We
could definitely do 2 hours just on the representation of Christians in the media. Yeah, but go ahead.
Parks and Rec. We've got to at least mention
Parks and Rec.
And Rec.
Okay, yeah.
Because Parks and Rec is, it's a sitcom. It's probably better than the other things I've mentioned so far, not without objection. It's set in Pawnee, Indiana, And yet there's only, to my recollection, one Christian character who's a two-dimensional caricature and is thoroughly unlikable. In contrast, you've got Ron Swanson, who's like a small government libertarian, and I don't doubt that he doesn't reflect the views of either the actor who plays him or the writers who write him, but they still write him lovingly. They write him as like a likable character, even if they don't agree with everything he says. Right. And so it's like they clearly can do this in other contexts, but here they've got Chris Pratt, who actually is a likable evangelical Christian. And they couldn't even plug in one person with his actual views.
Right.
Isn't just seemed like such a bizarre thing in Indiana to not have that.
Well, yeah, that is really something. The poor, pathetic Christian. I guess that's the best we can ask for, is just to be kind of pathetic and two-dimensional. At least where that person doesn't have bodies in the basement. But too often, man, as soon as you see that Bible, you know you're getting somebody creepy. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be right back with more news of the world from a Catholic perspective on the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
As Catholic apologetics have gotten stronger, Protestant responses have gotten stronger as well. And now they have their own answers to rebut the standard Catholic proofs. Don't fret, we've got you covered. In his new book, Meeting the Protestant Response, apologist Carlo Broussard gives well-reasoned biblical answers to Protestant comebacks. Order your copy of Meeting the Protestant Response today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As a child, the great theologian Thomas Aquinas asked, "What is God?" Best-selling author Kevin Vost's new book follows the mature thought of Aquinas in answering that question. In clear and approachable fashion, What is God examines God's attributes and considers questions about him that have vexed mankind for centuries. Order your copy of What is God today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Matt Swaim here. Tomorrow on the Sunrise Morning Show, we'll mark the memorial of St. John de Brebeuf and talk about his connections to the origins of the sport of lacrosse. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, where we are probably going to dedicate this entire hour to the world's greatest actor, Rainn Wilson, from The Office. But I'm not sure if we're going to. I promised a giant announcement, And we're going to get to that. But we've got people on the phone, and it's Flannel Panel. Flannel Panel, if you haven't heard before, it's when Joe and Chris come in and we talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective, and we let you get on and talk about the news of the world from a Catholic perspective. And the number is 888-318-7884. Going to a Forest in Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Forest, we're glad to have you here. Go ahead with your contribution.
It's quite a an honor to speak with you, gentlemen.
That's true, Forrest.
Oh my goodness,
that is
Forrest,
the truth.
You're living in the slow lane, brother.
We're just kidding.
Maybe so, but if you heard Mr. Check's ICC contributions, you'd be with me.
Oh yes, thank you for saying that.
Thank you, thank you.
Manifest, the television show.
Yeah,
The flight number they were on was 828. And in the introduction, there was a pillow on a chair that read that scripture passage, and underneath it was Romans 8:28.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing pleases me more than being able to remind you of something because you know so much. It embarrasses me when I think about what I don't know.
Oh, so you're saying right from the very beginning with the number 828, they had this Romans passage in mind. So this is a kind of a deeply embedded theme of the show.
It is a show that's intended to be edifying and uplifting.
Oh,
that
makes me happy.
It is.
Manifest, it's called?
Yeah. I just don't think it's that good.
Looks like it's on NBC.
Of TV. Yeah.
All right.
It was an enjoyable show. I enjoyed it, but it still wasn't Christian.
No, but Christians aren't kooks in the film.
That's true.
Yeah, we're not going for a Christian show yet. All we're asking for is don't make the Christians creepy, weird murderers every time you put a Christian in. Like, don't.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah. Forrest, we'll give you a choice. Would you like a book about Peter or a book about Jesus?
A reissue of Mr. Check's CD set of Lepanto.
I don't even know if we have any of that. Do you have the original?
Well, I didn't offer him that. I'm not giving it. No way. I'm not giving it to him. No, all right.
We haven't done it.
Do we have it? I'll tell you what. Edgar, make a note of it. We'll try to give it to him. All right? The Lepanto.
I had one and gave it away. Okay. I have one personally myself and gave another one away.
We'll find it for you.
We'll find it.
Get another one. Double check.
You don't have to.
We'll find it.
We'll send him to you.
I wonder if if Bernadette's listening. Bernadette can tell us if we've got one. All right, Forrest, hang on. Don't go anywhere because we'll get an address. We can send it to you, all right?
This is the first and last time, by the way, that the caller is going to ask for a product of mine and not of yours, Cy or Joe.
Nobody ever asks for a product of mine. No, I have one. No, the part of the joke there is that nobody ever. Well, I shouldn't say nobody ever, but rarely. Last time
you asked, and the caller asked for the one about Jesus, and everyone applauded.
Well, your book on Peter is very, very good.
I recommended your book on Peter to someone yesterday, Joe.
Oh, well, good. Yeah. I'm happy to hear that. Yeah. Well,
you want to do that big announcement?
No, what that book's about?
No, I'm waiting for Joe to.
Oh no, I've got nothing.
I said your book on Peter is very, very good, and then
I said thank you.
Oh, hey, Cy, your book on Jesus is
That's what I'm waiting for. Yeah. How does Joe not know that's what I'm waiting for?
I know.
Oh, no, I got nothing.
Thank you.
No, I said thank you. You're a mean person, Joe. All right, you ready for the announcement?
Yes.
All right, here's the big announcement. The flannel panel is going on the road, and we'd like you to come with us. And like a Bob Hope Bing Crosby movie, we're going on the road to Rome. It's the flannel panel pilgrimage to Rome, November 9th through the 18th of this year. And we're only 50 people can come because we want to keep it small and intimate and friendly. We'll do the live radio program there. We'll have talks and we'll see Rome. Maybe most importantly, when you go to Rome, where you stay is one of the key things. We're not going to stay outside. We're not going to take buses in and all that. We're staying right in the heart of the Rome, right next to the Forum.
Yeah, it's a lovely hotel. In fact, it's called the Hotel Forum. I've stayed there in the past. In my old days when I was with Rockford Institute, we used it quite a bit. It's a beautiful four-star hotel, and it is right across the street from the Forum. Very close to those of you who know the city, very close to Cosmas and Damien. And it's a superb location. And as Cy said, this is a trip for people who are ready to walk.
Yeah, we're going to have
several miles a day. We are going to see Rome on foot.
And it was the last time we went. First of all, I will say this. Chris Check was a huge hit because he, almost every brick in Rome, he can tell you that comes from where it comes from and why it's there. And people just loved that. I know I loved it. But this time, Joe Heschmeyer will be with us.
Who actually lived in Rome for a time there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, are we going to talk about this on the Ides of March and not mention
the Ides of March. I didn't even think about that. We will also visit the very spot. There's a tree growing there where Julius Caesar was probably.
I actually think
killed.
It's like it's a bus stop.
Well, there's a bus stop right next to it, but
there's
you think this actual bus
there? Yeah.
There's a tree there. Who told you that? Where he was assassinated.
Angelica told me that.
Okay.
You think she's wrong?
Maybe.
Hey, is Angelica going to be our tour guide on this
one? We can find the spot where, close to the spot where Caesar.
But I don't think that that's one of the main selling points of Rome. Is here's where they stabbed Caesar, but it is.
We can point it out.
But it's the Ides of March, so we mentioned it.
So one of the things I like to think about with respect to Rome, we talked about this last time when we were there, Cy, and it's a theme that doesn't exhaust itself. Christians and Catholics as well have kind of an understanding of Rome that is incomplete, and it's that Christian Rome replaced pagan Rome, and it didn't. It fulfilled it. And I think of this especially today because the gospel is our Lord saying, I did not come to change the law, I came to fulfill it. And I think the relationship between the church and Rome is the same. Christianity, the Catholic Church, fulfills Rome, the greatest empire ever in the history of the world. And it fulfills it. It doesn't replace it. So I think maybe we'll focus a little bit. We talked about the Age of the Martyrs when we were there last time, in that first three centuries especially, and now we can even move into kind of that period of late antiquity where we're actually having a transition from empire falling, and the church ascendant. I think it's especially apt for the time in which we live right now, because we're living in a dying age, and yet it's quite possible to live a full and joyful life.
Amen.
In a dying age.
Yeah.
And
right.
So that transition, sure, Augustine, Gregory the Great, so that transition from empire to nation and emergent church, so many beautiful things to discuss, and of course so many buildings relevant to this time period. We'll see the great usual things that you want to see when you go to Rome, and we'll also take you to stuff that other people do not see.
Yeah. Right.
Like some of the great churches up there on the Caelian Hill, for example. And
For me, the high point of Rome is the Scavi tour. So
that's on the list.
We'll do the Scavi.
We'll see the excavations under St. Peter's.
And see the bones of St. Peter, where they have rested for 2,000 years. Extraordinary, extraordinary thing to be able to do. Joe, will you have particular things you'll be pointing out in Rome?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I really like about it is, especially when you know the city a little bit, you can kind of duck in on any street and just find some amazingly beautiful church.
Yeah, I know.
So I was thinking about San Luigi dei Francesi.
Oh, we're going to have a mass there. We're going to have a private mass there.
Oh, wonderful.
Yep.
It's fantastic.
Yep.
It's got a beautiful Caravaggio.
Yep. So all three of
Saint Matthew. The St. Matthew cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, but one really good one. The other two.
That is not true. Not true.
Yeah,
although the one Caravaggio of the Call of St. Matthew.
That is the one he's referring
Maybe one of the greatest, probably one of the greatest paintings ever painted. But the other two are pretty darn good.
Like, if that's all he did, would he like, he was a good painter.
Yeah.
But then when you got Call of St. Matthew next week, you're like, okay, there's the great one and then the two. It's very much like this show.
Yeah. Oh, now knock it off, Joe. That's you two both.
I want to say thank you, Joe. Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that. I think by the end of it, we will probably have seen between 6 and 8 Caravaggios.
Yeah, and the Bernini's, those are some of the most beautiful objects in the world. I mean, the ecstasy of Saint Teresa, when you see that in its setting, it's astounding. It's astonishing what that is.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it should be stone.
It's not stone. It's something more now. I mean, it's just magnificent. And
Out a little bonus from Jen. We've arranged for the art historian Liz Lev to give a.
Oh,
we
she
did
is
not.
The best.
Yeah, to give. She's going to give a talk for our group.
I didn't even know that. Yeah. Jen didn't tell
me
that.
The daughter of Marianne Glendon, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Yeah, and she's in Rome most of the time. But when we go to your former stomping grounds there, we'll visit the Ange, and she's going to give a lecture for us there. Yeah,
that's one of the world's great art historians.
She really is. She's a delightful person besides.
And faithful, too. Now, this is one of the important things, is that when you look at some of the sacred art, for example, to have someone who is filled with the Catholic faith, it's not necessary, but it's an additional, it's a help in understanding the art and presenting it fairly.
I mean, it's almost necessary.
It's essential.
You know, we were talking earlier about how Hollywood can't, like, make a good Catholic scene. Well, similarly, I've been on tours in Rome with people who didn't have the faith, and glaring theological error after another.
Yeah.
And you think, well, if you're getting this much wrong about the stuff I do know, how much you're getting wrong about the stuff I don't know?
Right.
And so having someone who understands it from the inside, actually does make a difference.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what, you can't go on the website and sign up yet, but it's coming soon. As I said, we're selling 50 tickets, and that's it, because we want to all stay on one bus together. That's how we did it last time, and it was really an extraordinary experience. Got to know everybody and really enjoy the company of people, and also there's just kind of a hilarity of community that happens. It's a lot of fun. And so what you can do is, if you're interested, just shoot me an email, radio@catholic.com, and I'll make sure Jen gets it. The address is radio@catholic.com if you're interested in coming to Rome with us November 9th through the 18th this year.
Sorry, two quick questions on that. Number one, do you know when that'll actually go live, where people can sign up and they'll know how much everything is and all that?
I think within a week.
Great. Yep. Second question, can we make sure everyone brings flannel?
Yes, it's required.
Oh, yeah. You mean people who come with us?
I do. Oh, I mean, if you're listening to this, you want to come?
Yeah.
Hey, you know, add $20 to get yourself a flannel shirt.
You know what I want to do? You know when you go to the audience with the Pope on Wednesday and they announce all the groups that are there? I want them to, in with the Italian accent, the flannel panel from the United States. So we'll all stand up. And yeah, I want to do that. Okay, everybody's got to bring flannel. We'll bring extra flannels for you as well. There's more callers.
Will you find out what flannel is between now and...
I know what flannel is.
Wow.
Okay. I think I know what flannel is. Teresa in Boston, Massachusetts, the very heart of world civilization, listening on 1060 AM. Teresa, we're glad you're here. Go ahead.
Hi, I just have one quick comment that nobody mentioned blue bloods.
Ah, it's true. She's
been
right.
On for years. Yeah.
They say grace. They eat Sunday dinner together.
Right.
Oh, you know what? I've never seen it,
food.
But my mom has told me that exact detail. That
you know who's a Blue Bloods
together.
Fan is Father Paul Check, my brother. He watches
really?
The show. Yeah.
I know. I'm so glad you called, Teresa, to say that, because we want to give credit where credit is due. And it's not a purely a vast wasteland for Christians. Yeah, Blue Bloods. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Teresa... I can offer you a free book to thank you for your call. Would you like a book about Jesus or a book about Peter?
Oh, Peter.
All right.
Perfect.
All right, Teresa. Have you ever listened to the show before?
Was almost made there, and then it fell apart. It was
all right, Teresa. We'll send you the... No, I just to punish
Your
Teresa,
fellow Bostonian.
For my fellow Bostonian for not asking for the book about Jesus, send her both of them. She has to take my book as well as Joe's book. What is this with Catholics and book about Peter? Do they know that I wrote the Jesus book and that's why they don't want it, Joe? Or is it that they are more interested in Peter than Joseph?
I'm waiting for Protestant anti-Catholic apologist to just be like, look at all these callers.
Well, they never want a book
about Peter. You know,
yeah, right.
Make of that what you will.
I really liked Teresa's call, though. I'm glad that she mentioned Blue Bloods. I do want to move on to the next story, because I believe, remember mindfulness? Do either of you remember mindfulness?
Did it go away?
I think it had its moment in the sun, and now it's just kind of faded into the background, where I believe there are some people that are quietly being mindful
themselves. But you want to bring it back?
No, but I know what the next mindfulness is. Do you know what I'm talking about? How there's kind of these like spiritual fads in there.
Yes.
And I don't have anything against mindfulness. I'm not saying, I'm just saying
that
these
things. Oh,
you should,
though. You should.
Well, I like my mind.
No, it's problematic.
You don't.
Our friend Dan Burke did an excellent job with.
Did he? Okay, yeah. He's very good. So I would trust what he did. Yeah. Okay, but look, I just know what the next mindfulness is. You're going to be hearing tons in the coming months about awe. This is the new mindfulness. Experience awe. What you need in your life is an experience of awe. And I know this because I'm very perceptive. First of all, I'd like to share that because I'm a very mindful person. But also, the New York Times had a big article on it. There's a book from a California psychology professor on the importance. Now, that doesn't sound very good. California psychology professor. How would I put that together? But I'm sure there are good ones. But about awe, that we need the experience of awe in our life. And they even advise you on how to get the experience of awe. Go to the Grand Canyon and all that. I have strong feelings about the experience of awe. But I just wanted to share with you and see if either of you had a comment on the fact that the next big spiritual fad, I'm calling it right now, is awe.
Yeah, so this is, I was sympathetic to that woman's article.
In the New York Times?
Actually, a little bit.
Yeah, Hope Reese wrote it.
I like it when the self-important discover the self-evident.
I know. That's the thing. It's like, you know, one of these days they're going to, the New York Times is going to discover, you know.
God. They might discover God.
No, they're never going to discover God. But they're going to go, they're going to write an article that goes something like, we finally figured out sexual fulfillment. It's a lifelong commitment to one other person. And right. You're going to go, finally, they discovered the obvious. Yeah. So that is.
Monocules. You know, something like that. Like, they've got polycules now. So they'll have monocules. You just be like, what if you just, like, partnered up with one person forever?
And you were faithful.
You can't call it marriage.
No, but they won't call it marriage. They'll have.
Just like you can't call, like, charcuterie Lunchables. You got to give it a new fancy name.
So that's what they call it in Kansas City.
Lunchables?
Lunchables.
Yeah. Exactly. So, fancy Lunchables.
I think what's underway here, in fact, I know what's underway here. Our friend Father David McConey would talk about the seven deadly sins, and you know, and he would say, "Okay, all of them will send you to hell, but they do rank." And one of the things that he would point out, actually, anger is a worse sin than lust.
That makes me mad.
But all right, go ahead. But I actually think, I actually think that the deadly of our age right now is sloth, and it's not. Just slow, we tend to think of just kind of being lazy, laziness, but it's really this acedia, and it's just a lack of interest in higher things. And this lack of interest is, I don't want to say cultivated, but it's reinforced or it's exacerbated by screens. And this New York Times writer notes this.
Right, that's a very good point.
She says, if you want to start experiencing awe, I like the word wonder. Actually, G.K. Chesterton talks about wonder all the time. There's that great line of his, the world does not lack for wonders, but for wonder, right?
Oh, he's always so good with his aphorisms.
Right. But the problem is not that there aren't magnificent things to see and to be in awe of. It's just that we're not capable of it because we're constantly being dragged down by TikTok and Twitter and doom scrolling and all the different things that we do on our screen. So actually, she makes some really wonderful suggestions. Put your phone down, turn off your screen, go outside, go be outside for a time. Which is one of the things I love about California. I know I've talked about it on the air before, but it gives us a lot of opportunity to enjoy year-round extraordinary natural beauty. And we think, if we think about in history, how much time people spent outside throughout human history compared to how much time they spend now, which is very little, it makes sense that we've lost wonder in we could say the natural world, or actually call it more, you know, precisely what it is, God's creation. So I'm glad she's discovering this, I hope, frankly, that it's a conduit for people to say, okay, well, where did this come from? And in fact, I think, for example, our friend Logan Gage at the conference, I know, is going to, and Dale Alquist both, are going to pick up topics related to beauty and wonder with respect directly to belief in God.
Very well said. The book, by the way, that's going to get this whole movement going.
The awe movement.
It's called the awe movement. It's the new mindfulness. Awe, the new science of everyday wonder and how it can transform your life. Here's my problem with that title, too. Everything's got to be justified by science. You can't just say this is like having a sense of wonder is wonderful. You know, and secondly, everything's got to be sold to us as transforming our life. Like, first of all, that should give you a clue that everybody's really unhappy, that those are the books that sell. And second of all, you know, there is a way in which awe is an obligation. It's not an add-on to your life. If you don't have a sense of awe that God has made you and that God loves you and that the world exists and that, then you're failing in an obligation of justice. This is not just a self-help thing. Awe is required, and you've got to find it. You so the kind of the self a science that's going to transform yourself is a very tiresome theme for me. But I have to say, I agree with Chris that this is not a bad thing to discover. It's like if the day that the New York Times discovers marriage.
Yeah, I think it's all good, but I think you're right that the way it's being presented is troubling. Like it sounds like another self-help, sure. Another even almost like the resume building thing of just constantly like, how do I improve myself? Not because it leads to my fulfillment, but just to add on another like skill set. And it's not a terrible thing, but it actually is at cross purposes with the nature and disposition required for awe. I'm thinking of a line
Thank
Joseph
you,
Pieper has.
It's humility.
Right. He says, a break in one's work, whether of an hour, a day, or a week, is still part of the world of work. It is a link in the chain of utilitarian functions. The pause is made for the sake of work and in order to work. And a man is not only refreshed from work, but for work. And so he's saying there's a difference between true leisure, which is not for some other worldly purpose, and then this kind of like, oh, go on vacation and the company's going to pay for it because you're going to come back refreshed and be a harder worker. You know, those are two different mindsets. It might do the same thing of saying, you know, get outside, enjoy the stars for a while. But one of them, it's to liberate you, and one of them is just to make you a better worker.
That's a very, very, very good point. I have to say, as I read this article in the New York Times by Hope Reese, who, as Chris said, did a good job, I started to think about liturgy and our liturgy wars. And at some point, will someone go, you know, I don't mean this in a harsh way. I really don't. But the harmonica is not an instrument that arouses awe within us so that we can worship God. But the organ is, and a trumpet is, and the human voice is, so that we can start thinking about liturgy not just as performance, but as a call to worship. And I almost feel like, okay, if the scientists will back me up on that, I'll take any backup I can, because I really don't believe there should be harmonicas in church.
I think Joe's point about utility is really well taken, and it's one that I agree with what you say, Si. Joe's point about utility is one that Americans, I think, especially have some difficulty with. I just finished an excellent article in a back issue of New Polity magazine talking about how the consecrated nun is just a complete puzzle to the world,
right.
because there's absolutely no utility at all in a consecrated nun.
Right.
And in fact, even American Catholics who try to get their imagination around the consecrated nun, the woman who wrote the piece, I can't remember her name, makes the point, even American Catholics who try to get their imagination around the consecrated nun do it in terms of utility. Well, she's the one who's doing all the praying, right? Holding back the gates of hell so that, but to Joe's point, the idea of a consecrated nun existing just for that, not for the utility of praying, but as you say, for the for that liturgical relationship, and that prayer relationship. That's something
it baffles us.
The question of means and ends, you know, because if contemplation is a means to get to some other end, then that and not contemplation is your real goal,
right?
If you know contemplation will make you healthier, contemplation will make you you know, a more well-rounded person, then that's what you're really after. Whereas you want to be after contemplation for the sake of contemplation.
This
you want to be after contemplation for the sake of God. And this is like one of the major switches that happens with the Enlightenment is the subordination of contemplative knowledge for practical knowledge. This notion of like knowledge is power. And so pondering the stars, that's not useful. The steam engine is useful. Yeah, so pondering the stars, like this is... The reason I'm saying this is against awe is this is where the break from awe really happens. It's
well
much
said.
Deeper than just the modern moment.
Wasn't that the father of modern science? Wasn't Bacon who said knowledge is power?
Yeah.
Was that,
exactly.
And knowledge is not power. That's not the purpose of... I mean, knowledge can confer power, but especially when it comes to God, the purpose is not to gain power unless you think, you know, the power to love others. But
this is why I like to tell people over and over and over, Christianity is first a religion of being. It's a religion of being, before it's a religion of doing.
Yeah. So I look for awe. Awe is going to be the new mindfulness. I'm guaranteeing. I'm calling it right now. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We are going to start with a serious topic. We'll talk about what's going on in Germany with the German bishops and other news of the world from a Catholic perspective with Joe and Chris, the Flannel Panel on Catholic Answers Live.